Yesterday we did the first two Mishnayot of the second parak, where we introduced the principle that's going to be applied as we deal today with the third Mishnah. I want to review that very quickly, and I want to add another way of thinking about not a different rule, but the rule that we are going to use going forward. The rule is basically based on what I would think of as the mainline, most common interpretation of the first two, the first three Mishnayot. I mentioned to you that the Rav and the Rambam have a different approach. We mentioned what it is. We're not really going to go back to it in any significant way, but the approach that we talked about was that, assuming, for example, Rachel has four birds and Leah has four birds, and a bird flies from Rachel to Leah. So Rachel now is sitting with three birds, Leah is sitting with five birds, and what we said was that the halachic rule, forgetting for a moment why, the rule is that Rachel, who now has three birds in her nest, one of the birds can't be sacrificed. She sacrifices two birds. She takes a second nest of two birds, sacrifices them, and she's done. So she effectively was penalized two birds. Leah has no penalty. She puts aside one of the birds, not necessarily the bird that flew in, but she doesn't know which the bird that is, and she sacrifices four birds, and they're both at that point good to go. The logic that we used to explain the halachic rule was that if you think of Rachel with her three birds in her nest after one of the birds has left, then were she to sacrifice all three of those birds, then sacrifice three birds, and of course in addition to a fourth bird, those three sacrifices, two of them would have to be an ola or a chata. So you can't sacrifice three birds as olot and chatot without sacrificing at least two of them as either olot or chatot. So let's say, for argument's sake, she sacrificed two olot and one chatos, and then the additional bird is a chatos. Then she created an chatos in Leah's nest. In other words, her two olot that she sacrificed in her nest created her other bird, requires to be sacrificed as a chatas, and some bird in Leah's nest that was initially in her nest is effectively designated as a chatas. And now, if were that the case, you have a chatas flying into Leah's nest. By the laws of the previous chapter, Leah can only sacrifice two birds as a chatas. So, ostensibly, maybe to minimize the damage, or perhaps for other reasons, we penalize Rachel a second bird, so she only sacrifices two birds, and Leah effectively gets off scot-free. There is a second explanation to the same halachic rule, which is a little bit easier to work with, and let me just explain it very briefly. If you think about Rachel with three birds, and now Leah with five birds, were Rachel to sacrifice three, which again, we're going to say she can't sacrifice three, she has to go back to two and take two new birds, but were she to sacrifice three, then there is a possibility that her nest initially had four birds. She's going to sacrifice three of them, so she's going to create two birds of a certain type. Let's again say olot, so she creates two olot. What's going to happen to the bird that's now in Leah's nest? Well, the answer is we don't know. We don't know if that's going to be the bird that's going to be put aside. We don't know if it's going to be sacrificed. And we also don't know if it's sacrificed, how it's going to be sacrificed. So we at least have two levels of, lack of knowing. We don't know if it's going to be sacrificed. And if it's sacrificed, we don't know how it's going to be sacrificed. But again, we're dealing with kinim, so we take the worst possible case. What's the worst possible case? The bird in Leah's nest is sacrifices an ola. What would be the upshot of that? The upshot of that is the three birds from Leah's original nest are all counted as olot. And Leah creates a chova, she has to only sacrifice two olot and two chatot. So this is a slightly different way of explaining a very similar halachic rule. Again, the differences between these two, there are some minor differences. There are Rishonim who would prefer one over the other. We're going to use the second method of explanation because it makes the next Mishnah a little bit easier to deal with. So now we're going to go to the next Mishnah. And what we need to do when we go to the next Mishnah, if you'd like, is remember the rule. Don't think so much about the two explanations. Certainly remember the rule. So we're going to go through the Mishnah remembering the rule, and we're going to see that the Mishnah, before we get to the explanations, just at the, you know, just as the reading of the words, and does the rule, the halachic rule that the Mishnah established, does it follow from the halachic rule that we said drove the first two Mishnah? Once we see that all that works perfectly, we'll go back and think about a little bit some of the rationale. So, lezo achas, lezo shtayim, lezo shalosh, lezo arba, lezo chamesh, lezo sheish, lezo sheva. We now have achas shtayim doesn't mean birds, it means kinim. In other words, one means two, two means a kind of size four, shalosh means a kind of size six, and so on, arba eight, and so on and so on. So we have seven kinim, size 2, 4, 6 through 14, if you'd like, a total of 56 birds. Now, what's going to happen is these birds are going to begin to fly, and they're going to fly, importantly, successively, not simultaneously. In other words, a bird's going to fly, it's going to end up somewhere, next bird's going to fly, next bird's going to fly. So we're going to have a sequence of flights. Turns out a total of 24 flights in total, but let's start at the beginning. Parach mina rishona, lishnia, from the nest of two, bird goes to the nest of four. Lishnia, lishlishis, from the fourth to the sixth, brevius, lachamishis, lishishis, lishvius. So a bird flies from two to four to six, all the way, eventually, one bird is left in the first nest, 15 birds are sitting in the nest with 14 birds. Chazar, and now the bird returns. What does that mean? It goes back from the nest of 14 to 12, all the way back from 12 to the nest of 10, from 10 to the nest of 8. And finally, we now are sitting from the point of view of observing birds in nests, we're back to where we are. So what's the rule? Postel echad b'halichaso ve'echad b'chaziraso. It postels one in each direction. What does that mean by what we established yesterday? That every time a bird leaves a nest, an additional bird from that nest is disqualified. So now let's understand what happened. The first nest had two birds. As soon as a bird left, it's out of the picture. Nothing more has to happen. Two birds, one left, you can't sacrifice anything. The second nest, as soon as a bird left, it's down to two. The third nest, it loses two. Everybody loses two until the sixth nest loses two as it goes into the seventh. Then it goes the other way. The seventh nest loses two. The sixth nest then loses two successively all the way down till the second nest with four birds loses another two, and a bird ends up in the first nest. So let's take a look at how many birds flew in and out of every nest. So the first nest had a bird, one bird flew out, one bird at the very end flew in. The last nest, one bird flew in, one bird flew out. The intermediate nests, nests 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, those nests had a bird flying in and out twice. In other words, nest with four birds, a bird flew in, a bird flew out, and then going in the other direction, a bird flew in and a bird flew out. So by our rule, forget for a moment the rationale, just think exactly of the rule, the first nest had one bird leaving, it is down to zero birds. The seventh nest had, we don't care about the birds arriving, we only care about the birds leaving, had one bird leaving, it loses two birds, so it is down to 12. It has, as the Mishnah will say, six, meaning 12. Every nest in between had a bird leaving in each direction. One bird flew to the larger nests, one bird flew to the smaller nests. So all of the intermediate nests had two birds flying out, and as a result, lose four birds. So the first nest had two, it's down two. The last nest had 14, it's down to 12. All of the other nests are down by four birds. Now read inside, and that's exactly what the Mishnah says. Harishona v'ashniya ein lo klum. Two minus two from the first one, four minus four on the second. Hashlishi sheyesh lo achas. It has achas meaning two. Six minus four. Revius leish lo shtayim meaning four. Why? Eight minus four is four. Hachmishi sheyesh lo shalosh. The fifth that had ten is down to six. Hashishi sheyesh lo arba. Hashvii sheyesh lo sheish. Okay. So now, ostensibly, the rule has been applied exactly as we described it to this complex case. Now, parach v'chazar. Now, again, we're going to start flying. Now, usual interpretation, this is again disputed, but we're going to do the simple case. Parach v'chazar means that nest 1 and nest 2 that are completely at this point eliminated, in other words, the nest with 2 birds and the nest with 4 birds have no valid sacrifices left, so they are, not just are they eliminated, they are assumed to be dormant. No birds fly from either of those nests. So, parach v'chazar means from nest 3 to nest 4, from nest 4 to nest 5, from 6 to 7, and then back, all the way back to 3. So the same process happens again. So a bird leaves 3, and eventually a bird returns to 3. Parach v'chazar, posel echa b'alichaso v'echa b'chaziraso. Again, it posels an additional bird each direction. As we said, the psulim all accrue to a bird that left the nest. So Ashlishis had 2 originally. It has one bird flying to the 4. It has only one bird flying out. It's out of the picture. Haravias ain't lo klum. The 4, remember, had 4 left last time. It has a bird flying to the nest with 5. It has a bird flying with the nest of 3. So it loses 4 birds. Chamishis before had 10, down to 6, now down to 2. Hashishis leish lo shtayim, it had 12, down to 8, down to 4. Hashvius, what happened to it? It only had birds flying out. So from its initial 14, it is down to 10 birds. Chamish, again, meaning 5 pairs. Here we go again. Parach v'chazar. So now again, assuming now nests 1, 2, 3, and 4 have all been eliminated, so all of the flying will only occur between nests that are still have active sacrifices in them. Those are nests 5, 6, and 7. So nests 1 through 4 are out of the picture. So 5 has 2, 6 has 4, 7 has, at this point, 10. Parach achamishis v'ashishis, so the 5th bird flies out, 6th a bird flies in both directions, a 7th a bird flies out again. So again, 5 goes down by 2, it's at 0. 6 goes down by 4, it's at 0. 7 goes down by 2, it is now sitting at 8. V'yeshomrim, and some say, Hashvius lo hefsida klum. Now, what does this phrase, Hashvius lo hefsida klum, mean? There are 2 explanations. We're going to use just one of them. We'll use the explanation that's easier to explain, which is, didn't lose anything. The Yeshomrim says, maybe the 14th nest can sacrifice all 14 birds. Okay. So the alternative is that the 14th nest stays with 10. That's much, much, much harder to deal with. So we're going to take the simpler explanation of lo hefsida klum, which means it doesn't lose anything at all. Okay. Now, first, let's try to explain why the Yesh Amrim makes sense. The Yesh Amrim actually makes a tremendous amount of sense, because what is the basis of disqualification? The basis of disqualification is, if I sacrifice, my birds are somewhere else. So let's take the second explanation. Let's look particularly at the seventh nest with 14 birds. How many birds left its nest? 3 birds, right? Over each flight, a bird left. And it, as a result, was penalized an additional bird. So it's down to 8 birds. Where are those birds? Well, we don't know. You know, we don't know if birds flew multiple times. We don't know whether the bird flew once and stayed where it is. The birds, all we know is these birds are somewhere in nests 1 through 6. Now, are nests 1 through 6 going to be sacrificed? We just said that nests 1 through 6 are dormant. They don't do, we're not doing anything with them. We're going to let the birds there die. So, wait a second. Why can't I sacrifice all 14 birds in nest 7? There's, you know, what was I afraid of before? What I was afraid of before, that if I sacrificed, let's say, in this particular case, there are 11 birds in nest 7 at that time that come from the original nest. 3 birds have left. Right, yes, I'm sorry, there are, at the time when there at the time, the worst case is that 3 birds from that nest were from that nest. So those birds are not going to be sacrificed anyway. So since they're not going to be sacrificed anyway, they can't cause the number of birds of in the nest of 14 to have more than 7 olot or 7 chataot. In other words, the reason for disqualification is the fear that if we don't disqualify, we don't know if a bird is going to be sacrificed and how it's going to be sacrificed. And as we explained, as a result of that, we disqualify a bird in order to guarantee that no more than half of the birds in any nest are sacrificed as either olot or as chataot. But since the last nest, the birds that left it are not ever going to be sacrificed, there should be no restriction at all placed on the 14th nest, on the 7th nest with 14 birds. So that's the Yesh Arma, and the Yesh Arma makes a significant amount of sense. Now, let's think for a second. So that's the Mishnah. Now I want to just go back, and I want, using a very, very similar logic to the Yesh Arma, let's pick, I'm not picking randomly, let's pick the third nest after the first flight. So a bird went from 2 to 4, 4 to 6, 6 to 8, and so on. And then it came back all the way to 2. Let's look at the third nest. What did we say? We said that the third nest, if you go back to the beginning, we could do this, we could illustrate this with other nests and other flights, but let's just do that one illustration. The third nest, which had 6 birds, we said goes down by 4. Why does it go down by 4? Because it had one of its birds flew somewhere in the direction of 4, 5, 6, and 7, and it's sitting somewhere. And all of those birds are going to have valid sacrifices. Its other bird flew towards 2 or 1. It flew from 3 to 2, and either it stayed there or it went, you know, it was the bird that flew again. Doesn't matter. It flew south, so to speak. It flew to 2 or 1. One of its birds flew north. So what did we say? Since it had 2 birds flying out, it lost 2 additional birds. It's down to 2. Using the exact logic of the Yesh Arma, you can argue, wait a second, why should the third nest have lost a second bird because a bird flew to the nest of 4 or the nest of 2? Why does the nest of 6 go down to 2? It shouldn't go down because the bird that flew to the nest of 2 or 4 is not going to be sacrificed. So since it will not be sacrificed, why does the nest of 6 have to preclude an additional bird being sacrificed, more than half of its birds being sacrificed a particular way? It should not have to lose an additional bird. So that logic is, in a certain sense, exactly identical to the logic of the Yesh Arma. And those who use this approach to the Mishnah, and I mentioned to you that the Rambam and Ravid have a different approach to the Mishnah, have this complexity that the Mishnah's rule, that the Mishnah only at the very end talks about Yesh Arma. There are issues that you can attack prior to the last case, where the rule that the Mishnah established is not exactly precise. So, what do you say about that? Well, you can argue maybe the Yesharim covers all the cases, maybe the Tana was teaching us a general rule. Frankly, you know, even if the bird wasn't disqualified then, it would get disqualified eventually, so it was telling us a general simplified rule. It was Gzeira. You know, there are all sorts of explanations as to why the Mishnah has this, you might say, slight level of imprecision according to this interpretation. The questions are probably a little bit better than the answers, but that's not our concern. We understand what the Mishnah says. We understand that the Yesh Amrim identifies an imprecision with the rule, and the observation is that the logic of the Yesh Amrim might apply more broadly to other nests at various times in the Mishnah. The only thing I will mention to you is if you go through the Rambam and Ravid, particularly the Ravid, would require a lot of pencil and paper. Again, as I mentioned to you, the Ravid treats this Mishnah as if it were in the third Perek, meaning that the case is significantly different. It doesn't involve consultation. It involves the lack of consultation. So the Ravid's example, as best as I can tell, the words in the Mishnah fit perfectly. I think that's the case for the Rambam as well, though the Rambam, his explanation of the Mishnah is entirely different. As we mentioned yesterday, both he and the Ravid, the disqualifications are evenly distributed. When a bird flies from A to B, A and B both lose one, as opposed to A losing two. But the Rambam's case is not a case of something happening after the fact, it's something happening before the fact. And then, again, we have the same sort of issue with the Rambam that we had in the first year, where the Rambam told us in the case, different again than what you would assume to be the normal meaning of the Mishnah, the Rambam told us to bring, in our case of two chataot flying into a chova of eight birds, the Rambam, of six birds creating eight birds, the Rambam said bring all eight as chataot. Somehow, violating what we would normally assume is this notion of designation. Once certain birds are sacrificed one way, the other birds have to be sacrificed the other way. The Rambam apparently does not maintain that principle in all cases, and exactly when he does not, what principles he uses as a basis for disqualification, all of that, it makes the Rambam's Shita in Kinim extremely difficult to try to unpack. But nonetheless, the Rambam and Ravid, at least from what I can observe, their interpretation of this Mishnah does not have the imprecision that many Mefarshim deal with the explanation that we gave. Okay, last line of the Mishnah, v'imparach mibein ha-mesos l'chulam harei kulam yimus. That's very simple. If you have a group of birds that have to be killed, you don't know what's what, and one of them went somewhere, you, again, assume the worst case, you don't know what those birds were, they went somewhere, then you don't know what type of bird it was, you can't identify it, then you somehow can't do anything. Okay, now we have really... we're going to go very rapidly to the end of the parak so we can get into the next parak. The next three Mishnayot are not really that hard. Konstum v'kama fereshes. You have a konstum and a kama fereshes. Parak min astum alam fereshes. So a bird flies from the konstum of the kama fereshes. Let's assume that what this means is that once the bird flies in, you can't figure out any of the birds in the Kanu Feresha. So suddenly, the Konstuma is now mixed into, one of its birds is mixed into a group of three, and effectively all three are going to end up having to be left to die. So, similar halacha to the first, Yikach Zug L'Sheni, you take back a bird for the first Konstuma, you don't worry about the fact, because, again, similar to what we've been describing, that bird is going to cause no harm, because it's not going to be sacrificed. Chazar, If the bird, one bird from the Kan Mefureshes goes back, or Parach Mefureshes Rishon, if it flew from the Mefureshes and its label fell off, now, of course, you have a bird that is specified, you don't know what it is, everything is lost. Okay. Chatos mikan v'ola mikan, ustuma v'emtza, you have a chatos nest on one side, you have an ola nest on the other side, and in the middle is a kan stuma. Parach mina emtzel studim, bird flies from the middle, meaning from the stuma to the sides, echad helach v'echad helach, v'oiv zir klum. Eliyomer zesher holach etzel chatos chatos, zesher holach etzel olos ola. So there's no problem. The only reason you might think there's a problem is now if effectively you've tied the Kohen's hands. He can't sacrifice any bird that he wants either way. But then so what? So the Kohen now says, all right, I'm going to be a good guy. I'm going to choose to sacrifice the bird that flew with the olos as an ola, and I'm going to choose to sacrifice the bird that flew to the chatos. I'm going to sacrifice that bird as a chatos. So basically, I sacrifice each one according to the nest into which it arrives. Chazar le'emtza, now suddenly one of the birds goes back to the middle. So what does that mean? It is now a definite ola or a chatos because the sides had birds that were specified. Then obviously emtza mimusu. Now the middle birds have to be killed because you can't sacrifice any of them because you can't tell what is going on. That's because they went from both sides to the middle. Eli kuvu chataos veeli kuvu olos. Chazar, you have these birds that are supposed to be sacrificed as chataos and these as olos. Chazar oparach min emtzel et stadim heri kulu mimus. Okay, so you basically are describing cases that are not, that are not really harder than the ones that we've dealt with, which basically says that the only way you sort of get away with something and you don't lose is if a kan stuma flew into birds that are specified. But if specified birds fly into the middle and they fly from both directions, then effectively, you have the rule that we've established already, that a chatos flies in, only chatos can be brought. Ola flies in, only olos can be brought. If a chatos and an ola fly in, nothing can be brought. Okay, that's harayik kulam yimusu. Now the last piece, this is why it goes at the end. It goes at the end. It's a halacha about that we have to have matched birds. Torah and Bnei Yonah, em mivim Torah keneged Bnei Yonah, v'lo Bnei Yonah keneged Torah. Now this halacha, em mivim Torah keneged Bnei Yonah, Bnei Yonah keneged Torah, is actually machlokes Rashi and the Rambam is exactly what it means. We're going to follow, I believe, Rashi in its entirety in the third parak. I hate to say it, it looks like the Rambam is losing out in this year. We are discounting his point of view. So Rashi basically says that whenever you sacrifice a nest, the nest has to be uniform. I think the Rambam only applies that to a chova, but he allows you to sacrifice. You can sacrifice a nest of olot and a dava, a mixed nest. You can have a mixed nest when you create a nest of nedavot. It's not important. It's not really that important for the way we're going to approach the next parak. Anyway, but nonetheless, if you have a chova, you can't have a mixed chova. Kate said, now, what does that mean, you can't have a mixed chova? There's a slight machlokas Tanoim, ha'ishu shehevia chatos ha'tor v'olos ha'ben yonah, if you bring a chatos, a tor, and a ola ben yonah, tichpo v'savi olos ha'tor. So what does she have to do? She has to now bring her ola as a tor. Olos ha'tor v'chatos ha'ben yonah. If she brings the ola as a tor and the chatos as a ben yonah, tichpo v'savi olos ha'ben yonah. What does that mean? Basically, no matter what she does, she has to follow the chatos. For whatever reason, the chatos is considered to be the primary carbon, and whatever she brings the chatos, she has to bring the ben yonah. Ben azay omer holchin achar rishon. You go after the first. What does that mean? Meaning, if you brought a ben yonah first, in the case where you bring a ben yonah first, as say as an ola, and you bring a chatas afterwards. So you then bring, you don't follow the chatas, you follow whatever sacrifice first. Okay. If the woman brought her chatas and she died, then they still bring the ola. The ola is not a kapara. The fact that she died is immaterial. If she brought her ola, reasons that we won't go into entirely, because she's already dead, she doesn't require any forgiveness, so she doesn't bring a chatas. End of the second parak. Now, we go into the third parak. The third parak really deals now with a major change in circumstance. So let's learn. We're going to try to learn the first two Mishnayot. The second Mishnah is among the more difficult, and then the remainder of the Mishnayos also have different forms of challenge associated with them, but we're going to try today to cover as much as we can at the beginning of the third parak. But Medvarim Amurim, what is all this about? Up till now, we've been talking about people who effectively obey the rules. When they have a question, they ask a shayla, the shayla gets adjudicated, and they follow the rules. But Kohen Nimlach, the Kohen consults. Aval b'Kohen she'enu nimlach, but a Kohen who basically goes ahead and doesn't consult. And for the most part, what that means is that when the Kohen is looking at a con, he's looking at a nest of arbitrary size, he is going to sacrifice half the nest one way, half the nest the other way. He's not going to ask all these shaylas. He's going to say half the birds one way. Now, was it his fault or the woman didn't tell him? The women didn't tell him. I'm not going to go into that. The case that we're dealing with is a Kohen was confronted with a mixed nest, and we'll see various types of mixed nests. The Kohen doesn't ask any shaylas. He goes ahead and sacrifices half of the birds one way, half of the birds another. Okay. So now we are fundamentally going to go through the cases in the first chapter. Interestingly, we don't go through any of the cases in the second chapter under this scenario. I mentioned to you that the Ravid interprets the third Mishnah, the first three Mishnayot in the second chapter, as if it was a Kohen and a Nimlach. But we will not do any of that. We're going to have a hard enough time dealing with the cases just in the first chapter. Achas lezu, v'achas lezu, shtayim lezu, shtayim lezu. This is exactly the case before, that where we had kinim of graduating larger sizes. Also, so what did we say? What did we? But they were equal size. In other words, both women had kinim of the same size, of arbitrary size. So this one had two, you had two, four, four, eight, eight. It doesn't matter. So what did we say last time? We said, what are they allowed to do? They can do mechzer kosher, mechzer kosher. What did we say? Bring half his olot, because each woman was required to bring half his olot, bring half his chataot. Each woman was required to bring half his chataot, and we're good to go. What's the halacha after the fact? Now listen carefully. Atha chulum lamal. Oh, wait a second. This is not what we talked about last time. Mechzer kosher. So if the Kohen somehow was told, or on his own for reasons unknown, simply brought all of them as olot, half for kosher. Why is that? Because the principle we're going to apply in the third chapter is find the worst case. Once I found the worst case, or the worst cases, we'll see occasionally that there may be more than one worst case that has to be dealt with, but find the worst case, and after I've established the worst case, I figure out what was sacrificed correctly anyway. If it was sacrificed correctly in the worst case, then credit is given for that sacrifice. So, let's take this case. You have now, let's say, six birds and six birds. So, each woman had three olot, three chataot. Three olot, three chataot, 12 birds. The Kohen goes, and he sacrifices all 12 birds as kulam lamala, mechzer kosher. And what happened? He sacrificed 12 birds. He should not have sacrificed 12 birds as olot. Of those 12 birds, how many birds were sacrificed incorrectly? Well, all the chataot. Were the olot sacrificed correctly? Yes. it was supposed to be. What was supposed to be? If we knew exactly what was going on, we would have brought six olot, six chataot. So, mechatzar kasher. What you'll see in this perek is, for the most part, it's very difficult. In fact, you'll see that you really, you know, I wouldn't say, never say never, but for the most part, half is always going to end up kosher. Because no matter what you do, half is going to have to end up right. So here, you sacrifice all the birds as olot. There were only supposed to be six olot, six chataot. You get credit, mechatzar kasher. Kulam lamata, same thing. Mechatzar kasher, mechatzar pasul. Now, what happens if you do what you were supposed to do last time? Chetziyam l'malav chetziyam mata. That's what you would have done had there been consultation. You know, God forbid that case would end up any worse. Eshel l'mala mechza kosher mechza pasul. Eshel l'mata mechza kosher mechza pasul. Then of the six birds that you sacrifice as olot, when you sacrifice six olot and you sacrifice six chataot, now figure out what's the worst you can do. Well, the point is that the worst you can do, now you have to think, what could you have done? What's the worst case that could happen? Well, the worst case that can happen, Rachel and Leah, six birds each. Rachel has six birds, Leah has six birds. Let's take the worst case. The worst case is all of Rachel's birds are brought as olot, all of Leah's birds are brought as chataot. Anything different than that, more birds will end up being kosher. So the worst case is all of Rachel's birds are brought one way, all of Leah's birds are brought the other way. Under that scenario, half of Rachel's birds are kosher, half of Leah's birds are kosher. That's exactly what the Mishnah says. So if you sacrifice half as olot, the worst can be is all those olot, none of them belong to two people, they all belong to one of the women. They're all Rachel's olot. So Rachel gets credit for three olot. What about chataot? You sacrifice all of Leah's birds as chataot. She gets credit for three chataot. Think about it carefully. If they didn't do that, if some of the olot that were sacrificed belonged to the other woman, then more olot are kosher, because she's also mechuyev to bring karbolot. And better yet, some of the chataot are mixed. So you'll get more. You'll get a yield of more than six. But we don't know that. So in this parak, remember the rule. Always look for the worst case after the fact. Not the worst case that could happen and then disallow any sacrifice. In that sense, this principle is somewhat similar to the principle in the first chapter. We're looking for the worst case. But we're not looking for the worst case that could possibly happen and then disallow, as we did previously, anything that could violate that worst case. We're looking for the worst case after the fact. Now, notice something really interesting. In this particular case, where the birds were of equal size, listening and not listening effectively from an economic perspective ended up with the same result. Half the birds were kosher. So had you listened, you would have done only the third case. You wouldn't have sacrificed all the birds as olot or chataot. You would sacrifice half and half and half. That's exactly what we were told to do in the first parak. So in a certain sense, when the nests were equal, you did have additional things that could have happened. All olot, all chataot. Again, what the implication of that is, we won't go into, but from an economic perspective, of the 6 and 6, 12 birds, the same, numerically, the same value is extracted, even if you act without consultation. That's the case when the nests are of equal size. Now we go back, if you remember, in the first parak, we had a great case. We had a case with 232 birds. Achas lazu, meaning one nest, two birds, yishtayim lazu, shalosh lazu, total of now 2, 4, and 6, 12, eser lazu, 20, umei lazu, and 200, total of 232, and please remember the number. Asa chulam lamala, if he makes all of them lamala, he takes all 232 birds, he sacrifices them in one side, mechza kosher. Why? Because, again, half of these birds were meant as olot. He brought them all as olot, so he gets yield half. Umechza pasul. Kulam lamata, he brings all of them as chataot, mechza kosher, mechza pasul. Now we get to the really perhaps the hardest few lines in the Mishnah, in Kinim. Chetzim l'mala v'chetzim l'mata. If he now brings half as olot and half as chataot, let's first read the words to the end, and then we'll go back and we're going to illustrate what this principle is, and we'll try to outline what the Tana is implying in its most general case. So he brings half and half. The Tana says, Hamerube kosher. The majority are kosher. Now, what does the term meruba mean precisely? We'll get to that in a minute. Zaklal, this is the rule. Kol makom shata yochol l'chalok es hakinim. Anytime you can divide the kinim, lo yiyu mishel isha achas bein lamala bein lamata, mechtze kosher. If you can divide the kinim, and we'll see exactly what that means, you end up with half. So this is telling us the principle I was alluding to. You can't do worse than half. So mechtze kosher, mechtze pasol. Makom makom she'ein ata yochol l'chalok es hakinim, achi yiyu mishel isha achas bein lamala bein lamata. If you can't divide, hamerube kosher. The majority is kosher. Okay, now we're going to try to unpack this particular Mishnah. This is, opinion, the most interesting Mishnah in Kinim. So I want to make sure we understand this Mishnah very, very, very well. So first, let me use a simple case. And as soon as we do the simple case, we'll go to the case in the Mishnah, which many, many Mefarshim work out in detail. And then we'll go to a yet more general case. We'll go to three or four more general cases. And once we've gone through a large number of cases, hopefully what the Mishnah means by the term meruba will begin to become clearer. For those of you who are very mathematically oriented, we will provide a very precise definition, combinatorially, of what the term meruba means. But what's important is if we go through five or six cases, I'm sure that most of you will be able to pick any case you'd like, and I can, if you'd like, I'll probably do it tomorrow. I'll give you at the beginning of this year tomorrow, I'll give you a bunch of examples that you can work as homework to see if you really can work through this Mishnah. But today what I'm going to do, is I'm going to work through a couple of cases. So let's take a case of two nests, one with four birds and one with six birds. So we now have a total of four birds, six birds, 10 birds altogether. So what would have happened in the first chapter? In the first chapter, what did we say? If there's a small nest and a big nest, you can sacrifice four birds. Why can't you sacrifice an additional bird? Because you may sacrifice, if you sacrifice, say, a fifth bird, it may cause a third bird from the nest of two to be sacrificed the same way, and the nest of four birds can only provide two olot and two chataot. So we had the principle, four is the answer. What we'll see very quickly now is that six becomes the answer. So in this case, Hamaruba, the case, as you would expect, four and six. First parak, four. Here, you'll see six. Now, why is that? So you now have 10 birds. And what you're trying to do is you are trying to disqualify as many birds as possible. Now, how do you disqualify birds? Realize that you can't disqualify more than half. So if you think of this as sort of like the evil angel is coming to pick birds and sacrifice them in the worst possible way. So this evil angel who's trying to sort of do things as badly as possible, he knows if he is entirely successful, he can disqualify half. In other words, under the assumption he sacrifices half as chataot and half as olot. If he sacrifices half as chataot and half as olot, the most he can do is disqualify half. Okay, so he's going to try to do that in every case, and we're going to see where he'll be successful, how successful he'll be, and eventually we'll intuit a mathematical rule about what's going on. So again, the case of three and six. So four and six. Total of 10 birds. First chapter, 4 are right. Now, let's try to disqualify as many as possible. So what do? We take the nest of 4 birds, and we say, you know what we're going to do? We're going to get this nest entirely disqualified. Because remember now, how many birds are going to be sacrificed each way? It's going to be 5 and 5. So the nest of 4 all fits on one side. So I put all 4 birds, say chataot, on one of the sides. I have a chatos, I have ola on this side. I put all birds on all the 4 birds on one side. Now, if I do that, I've now disqualified half of the nest of 4. What happens to the nest of 6? Oh, now, 5 of its birds are on the other side. 1 of its birds are on the same side as the 4. So that, it turns out, if you think about it, you can't do worse than that. You disqualified half of the 4, and you disqualified as many of the 6 as possible. Now look at what happened in that case of 4 and 6. Of the 4, how many birds have you yield? How many birds are kosher? Of the 4, 2 birds are kosher. Now let's look at the 6 birds from the larger nest. 5 are on one side, 1 is on the other side. Think of the 2 birds from the larger nest that are on opposite sides of the nest. Oh, they've been correctly sacrificed. You know, mazel tov, something got done right. The 5th and 6th bird from the larger nest give you 2 valid sacrifices. What about the other 4 birds from the larger nest? They were all sacrificed the same way. Oh, only half are kosher. When you sacrifice the same way, you've sacrificed half of what you've sacrificed is incorrect. Half of what you sacrificed is correct. So if you look at the case of 4 and 6, you see that how many birds ended up being sacrificed. The 4 contribute 2. 2 birds from the large nest contribute 2. The other 4 birds contribute 2. 2 plus 2 plus 2, a total of 6 birds. Hey, 6, that's the number of birds in the larger nest. Now, you all know that one mathematical example does not create a mathematical rule, but that is the mathematical rule. A merubah kosher, we haven't specified exactly, but in that case of 4 and 6, you see the Mishnah's term, a merubah kosher, is precisely correct. This, by the way, is the example the Rambam uses. Okay, let's go to the case in the Mishnah, because that's the case that's a little bit more complicated. So, we have 200, 20, 6, 4 and 2, 232 birds. Now, what's the worst we can do? Well, this, and we, what are we going to do? What are we going to end up with? 232 divided by 2 is 116. So we have 116 birds that are supposed to be sacrificed on each side. So again, our attempt at maximal disqualification: we take all the small nests and we put them on one side. That's really the worst that we can do. We take the 2, the 4, the 6, the 10, the 20, all 32 of those birds, and we stick them on one side. Say, all chataot. Now we have a huge nest of 200 birds. How many spaces are left on the side of the 32? 32 subtracted from 116 is 84. How many are on the other side? On the other side, we said we have 116. 116 plus 84 equals 200. So, you know, the numbers, you know, will always work out. So that is the worst case that we can do. We can disqualify half of all of the smaller nests. But now look what happened to the larger nest. The larger nest is going to stick 116 birds on one side and all the remaining birds, all 84 remaining birds, on the second side. Now let's figure out what the yield is from that, again, the worst case. Now again, I haven't really proven that's the worst case, but I hope if you work this out with pencil and paper, you'll see that you really can't do worse than that. The worst you can do is disqualify the smaller nests. Okay, so now let's see what the yield is. I have 84 birds on one side and 84 birds on the other side. So of the 168 birds from the larger nest, despite my best efforts at making things as bad as possible, 168 birds are kosher. Of the 32 birds from the smaller nests, half are kosher, 16. So again, I had 84 and 84, 168. 16. What about the large nest on the other side, the other birds left over? This, I put 116 birds on the other side. 84 I matched up. The other 32, half are kosher. What have I got? I have 84 and 84, 168, 16 and 16, 32, 32 and 168, 200. Oh my God. The Mishnah got something. This is brilliant. Every time, no matter what I do, the large nest in this particular case turns out to be correct. Now, many, many Mefarshim end here. I want to look at a few more cases because this Mishnah is really much deeper than those two cases. So now let's look, and I'm not going to try to give you some of the more challenging cases. Today, we're going to end up by doing just two more cases, and then we'll stop. And then tomorrow, when we start, I'll give you some time to digest, if you'd like, and think this through overnight. I'll give you some more challenging cases tomorrow. But let's do two more examples. And once we see these two examples, the second example is the one that will begin to effectively uncover the depth of this Mishnah. And I must say, it's been probably in the last 150 years where mathematicians have worked this Mishnah over. And there are a number of different ways that different people have tried to, all to the same result. In other words, what's different is the mathematics, not the halachic result. But people who've looked at this Mishnah mathematically have come away very, very impressed. Not with something that's being read into the Mishnah, but what I think really is the intent of the Tana. So let's now look at two other cases. One simple case, 2, 4, 6, 8 birds. Okay, 2, 4, 6, 8 birds. So let's do the math. 2, 4, 6, 8 is 20. Good. You know, after a long shear, sometimes things get a little harder. So we have 20 birds. What? Now, again, you're trying to disqualify as much as possible. So you turn around and you say, I can disqualify the maximum amount. What can I do? I take the two, nest of two, and the nest of eight, put them on one side. So now I have all of them as olot, say. And I put the nest of four and six on the other side. So now the person trying to create maximal disqualification is given an A for his efforts. He's done the most he can. He has disqualified a total of half of the birds. Next case, last case that we're going to do, and then we're going to stop. The case, let's take a case, 2, 4, 6, and 6. Instead of having a total of 20 birds, he has a total of 18 birds, 2, 4, 6, and 6. So a total of 18 birds, 9 one way, 9 the other way. Now he has 2, 4, 6, and 6. He says, what can I do? He says, well, you know, I can't disqualify. 9, by the way, they're not going to fit. So that makes the case a little bit easier. What's the most he can disqualify? He takes the 2 and the 6, and he puts them on the same side. So now that 2 and the 6 are sitting on the same side, what's left to the other side? Meruba. 4 and 6, slightly bigger than 2 and 6. Again, that's what the Mishnah means when it says merubah. You take the maximal disqualification of nests. Now, for those mathematically, it's not always the smallest nest. As in this case, we took a 2 and an 8. They're much more complicated cases, but let's work through this case. 2 and 8, one side. 4 and 6, have to go everywhere else. So what happens? I don't really care which of the birds in the 4 and the 6. One of those birds is going on the same side as the 2 and the 6. So 2 and 6, one of the birds from the 4 and the 6. So now let's look at what the yield is. The 2 and the 6, again, half. 2 and 6 is 8, yield is 4. I don't know, one bird and one bird from the 4 and the 6 are now matched. They are mated pairs. Chatos and Ola, they go on both sides. They have a positive yield of 2. The remaining 8 birds from the 4 and the 6 have no mate on the other side. So they again contribute half. So half of 8 is again 4. How many birds are kosher? 4. 4 and 2. Again, a total of 10. What is the merubah? Think of 2, 4, 6, and 6, and try dividing that up. 2 and 4 is the mu'at, that's the 8. 4 and 6 is the majority, that's the 10. That's what this Mishnah means. And we can continue to do more and more and more complex cases. What you're going to find is that merubah, what merubah means is you take a one side, you try to disqualify by packing it to the top as close as you can come. When you're done, there's going to be either you've packed it perfectly, as we did in the case of 2, 4, 6, and 8, or, as we showed in the case of 2, 4, 6, and 6, you can't pack it perfectly. So, what is the merubah? The merubah is the entire other side, plus whatever is left that you couldn't pack. And clearly, that merubah could be zero, because you can pack evenly, or it's going to be slightly more than half, or in the case that the Mishnah had of 220, 6, 4, and 2, it was way more than half. So, merubah means whatever is left in after you've packed maximally on one side, plus the other side. And of course, that's always going to be minimally half, but it could be more as well. So that's the second Mishnah. One can prove this Mishnah, one can formulate this Mishnah very precisely. We'll start tomorrow. I'll just give you, having thought about this a little bit, I will give you a couple of more complicated cases, and then we're going to move on to the other Mishnayot in this parak. A number of them are challenging. I'm going to spend most of our time covering more conceptual material. So we're going to bias towards circumstances that are somewhat simpler. Now, we were going to see in some of the cases further on, just knowing what the case is extremely difficult. And a lot of the machlokas between Rishonim is about the case. And we could really get ourselves tied up trying to look at what the circumstance in the Mishnayot tomorrow happened to apply to. We're going to, by and large, bias to the simplest case, because that will get us most quickly to some additional concepts. And there are a number of additional concepts in the remainder of the chapter. But the good news is we covered the hardest Mishnah in the Masechta. And again, I encourage you to play around with numbers to understand what the term Merubah Kasher means.